last year, one of our members asked me to do some sermons on peace, tranquility, and that kind of thing, and I did a couple, and I'm just kind of stretching it out into the next year, which is this year, and this is part of that. I haven't said each time that I've preached on this that that's what it's about, but that's what it's about, is this right here. So, you know, anxiety is an easy sermon to preach on because it's easy to think about how much anxiety there is. I don't know if you really are paying much attention to this coronavirus thing, but I'm really glad we have modern medicine. I'm really glad we have the network of information that we have about that. I don't know how much you're familiar with history, but 100 years ago was the Spanish flu pandemic. It went across the whole world and killed, I can't even remember how many, 100 million people or something like that. It was unbelievable. A huge percentage of the population of the world died. So I don't think we're going to get into that. And I think one of the reasons is because of modern communication and modern control of all of that. So my great-grandfather died of that pandemic. I never knew him. So, but that's not the only anxiety we've got. We've got a whole handful, double handful of anxieties that come up to us all the time that we're just going to have to live with. We're just going to have to live with them because they're not going to go away. And we're going to have to learn how to manage them with the tools that God gives us. And this is the last chapter in Philippians. And the last thing really that he has to say to this wonderful congregation of God's people, just wonderful congregation. And he wants them to have that sense of calm. He wants them to have that sense of peace and security in Jesus Christ. He wants us to have the same thing. And so if there's ever a place we could go to, hopefully it would be here where we worship and pray and sing toward God, to God, about the love that he has for us and our love for him, and that would help our anxieties. In Luke chapter 10, and just reference this, it talks about Mary and Martha, and I've said this in either last week or the week before, I can't remember when it was, but the Greek word for anxiety means to be blown up into pieces, basically. It means to be fragmented. You know, it's like one of those puzzles that's 1,000 pieces, and they're all about as big as your fingertip, and you cannot figure out where they go. I hate things like that. I need those 3-piece puzzles where I can get it just really fast. So, but that's the way, you know, that's the way life is. Got so many different things that are pulling at us, and they call for our attention. And most of the time, the anxiety is, it has to do with time that we don't have to give and things that we can't solve anyway. So, you know, that was kind of, in part, was what Jesus was saying to Martha and Mary. Mary was single-minded. And really, in a very real kind of way, that's where the solution to anxiety comes, is to be single-minded. To have that one supreme single-minded focus that overrides everything else and takes care of everything else with all. But I'm going to get to Philippians chapter 4, but I'm going to do quite a bit before I get there. We're going to get to the text here at the end of our sermon today. But so much of our problem really, I think, has to do with expectations. We talk about expectations a lot, and we really should talk about expectations a lot, because what we expect God to do for us in our life is just a huge thing. What we expect the Christian life to be like, our lives to be like, and so many times they're not like that at all. That's when the anxiety comes in with all of this. Yeah, so I heard this illustration, so I'll use it. Imagine you go up to this door, and the guy says, okay, behind this door is a regal honeymoon suite, you know, for people who've just gotten married, and it is just set up fabulously and all like this. And he opens the door, and it doesn't quite fit your imagination of what the honeymoon suite was going to be. It looks more like Motel 6 in Barstow. And I've been to the Motel 6 in Barstow, and believe me, it is not a honeymoon suite. And so I think, wow, you don't know what you're talking about. So you have that expectation because of what you think is going to go on with that. But if you walked up to the same door, exact same door, exact same person, and he said, this is a jail cell, and he opened it up, and you'd think, wow, pretty nice jail cell. It looks like a Motel 6 in Barstow. But it would be completely different based on your expectations, all right? Now, this really does fit, I think, with our anxieties about our Christian life. I mean, just consider this. Before we became a Christian, whenever that was in our lives, we had one enemy, okay? And it was God. We had made him our enemy. He did not want to be our enemy, but he was our enemy. Romans chapter 5, we were yet enemies. Christ died for the ungodly. Now consider the fact that the enemy that we had made from God, God was constantly trying to solve that broken relationship with good deeds, kindness. He sends the rain on the just and the unjust. He was just over and over again doing wonderful things to us to show us his love and to lead us to him in kindness in all of those things. So we respond. And he mends that broken relationship that we have with one another, and we stop having that one enemy, and we become God's friend. Now who's our enemy? Oh, my word. Satan is not going to do anything nice for us. He's not going to do anything kind for us. He is going to try to destroy us at every possible moment. So what you have is, you go from one person who's your enemy, who is the kindest being that's ever lived, if you say it like that, and then you move to the most hateful, abusive, destructive, virulent being that's ever lived. And now that's your enemy. And when you're a Christian, or before you're a Christian, when God is your enemy, all of God's people are trying to be kind to you. When you become Satan's enemy, not only is he your enemy, all of his followers hate you. Difference there. There's a huge difference between those two things. And I think sometimes when we talk about expectations and we talk about this kind of thing, when people become a Christian, they can be either shocked or surprised or dismayed that their life becomes so terrible. They thought it was going to be great. But what they don't understand is the enemies that they've now made with people. And it does get depressing, and it does produce anxiety, and it does produce sadness. And people are angry sometimes when they are assaulted so terribly by Satan, and they do get frustrated, and they say, it's not supposed to be like this. And they're 100% right. You'd wish that it wouldn't be. But that is the world that we live in. And if we have false expectations about all of this, then we're just going to have real problems. Think about what God did for us in his loving kindness when we were his enemy. I heard this illustration and I thought, this is pretty good. It's very simplistic, but I think it gets the point across. Imagine you're at a creek. We don't have many creeks out here. A creek is not a river. It's a smaller version. But there's rocks out in the creek, and there's a cat that's in the middle of the creek on a rock, and cats do not like water. I don't know how that cat got there, but the cat is there, and it will not get in the water to get to the side so it can be freed. So if that cat's ever going to make it, somebody's got to go out there and get it, right? What's going to happen? You go out there and you get close to that cat, and I mean he is going to hiss at you and bite you and scratch you and fight you because he's scared, because he's angry, because whatever. Somebody, if the cat's going to get saved, is going to have to reach out there with his hands or her hands and take the scratching and take the biting and bleed in order to bring that cat to safety. Well, that's what God did with us. He was willing to do that. His kindness is just unbelievable. And his love is supreme in all of those things. So before we became a Christian, our enemy was good. After we become a Christian, our enemy is bad. And we don't need to get confused about expectations of the way our life is going to be in regard to all of that because of the peace that we need to have because of our salvation. There are three things. One is the devil, the devil influences the world. And then the third thing is the fallen flesh that we live in. Those three things. And we need to understand those three things all at once. We need to understand them just as completely as we possibly can to understand the circumstances that we find ourselves in. We've got to understand the devil. The Bible, it's so amazing to me that people say, I don't believe in the devil. The Bible is completely ununderstandable without Satan. Completely ununderstandable. There is no explanation for almost anything that goes on in the Bible without the devil. And yet they don't want to believe in him. But that is what they say. They say they're not going to believe in that. But here's one of the big problems that exists. And it's the same with expectations, and it's the same thing that we've really been saying in all of this. If we make the mistake of overestimating Satan in our life, we're going to have real problems. If we overestimate his power versus God's power in our life. Because what will happen when we overestimate Satan is we're going to give up too soon. We're going to give up before it's time to give up. Of course, it's never time to give up. We have God on our side. But when people are assaulted by Satan and their expectations aren't met and they're filled with anxiety and they have all of these different things that go on, it really is easy to give up because he seems so supremely powerful. And we're not looking at God like we should. You'll kind of see why I'm going to say this in a second, but let me get to it. In World War II, Singapore. You know, Singapore today, I'd like to go to Singapore. I don't know why I'd go there, but I'd just like to go there. It's an island state in Malaysia. I looked it up. 5.6 million people, pretty crowded. But it's a beautiful island state. Back in 1942, it was called Fortress Singapore. It was hugely important to the Allied army against the Japanese. I mean, there's no way to overestimate the importance of Singapore. The British ran it. It was a colony. And they had fortified it. They had 15-inch guns that would shoot 24 miles. That's from here to San Carlos. That's from here to Sarah and Alejandro's house. Everybody up there. That's how protected they were. And they didn't believe it could fall. Well, the Japanese were determined, and so they didn't attack it from the sea. They attacked it from the land. And they thought that was impossible because of the logistics of the whole thing. Well, long story, I'll make it really short. The British didn't know it. The Japanese had less than 24 hours of artillery left, 24 hours of bullets left. They were down to less than 24 hours of fighting. And the Japanese commander called the British commander, and they met, and he just went on a rant that intimidated the British commander, and the British commander surrendered. Now, when I say this, this is what I was getting to. Winston Churchill called that the greatest defeat in British military history. Now, that's saying something right there. All of British military history, not just World War II, the whole thing. And you know why? He overestimated. People do exactly the same thing with Satan. They don't understand that his power is under the power of God. And then they'll overestimate or they'll underestimate. They won't wear the armor of God. They won't prepare themselves with scriptures. And then they fall. That's the thing that Paul in Philippians is trying to get the Philippian Christians to not do. To take all of the anxieties that we might have about how powerful Satan is or what he's going to do to us or what he's going to do in whatever kind of way that he might decide to do it and put it in its right kind of place and understand it in the right kind of way. So you have Satan, who is a supernatural power. Now, Paul talks about that. Remember that in Ephesians chapter 6. For our fight is not against flesh and blood. It's against principalities and powers in heavenly places, the spiritual forces of wickedness and darkness. I mean, he doesn't downgrade it at all. But what he does do is he talks about our armor that God gives us. All right, we talked about that last year when we talked about Ephesians. But Satan is this supernatural being who has unbelievable power, and he's got all of these other beings under him that have all of this power, and none of them are as powerful as God. But what Satan does is he tempts us, and after he tempts us and he gets us to fall, he accuses us before God. Isn't that what he did to Job? Isn't what he said to God about Job the truth in some senses? Yea, skin for skin, a man will give everything for his life. He will make any compromise. He will give up any spiritual value. He will deny you, God, just to save his life. And with some people, that's true, but it's not always true. So you have Satan, who is the great deceiver. Then you have the world, who's under the influence of Satan. Remember, in the temptation of Jesus, Satan takes him up to an extremely high mountain and shows him all the kingdoms of the world that fundamentally were under Satan's influence. The world has its philosophy, and it is an anti-God philosophy. The world that we live in is always trying to get us to cooperate with it. And the world's philosophy is a now philosophy. Don't worry about later, just be concerned with now. Don't worry about what's going to happen in the future times. Just go ahead and make compromises right now to make yourself happy. So we fight against Satan, and then we fight against the world that we live in. And then the third thing is the flesh, because we're drawn to do what the world wants us to do. And we're drawn to do what Satan wants us to do. Job was tempted to do what Satan accused him of. And his wife did do it. Why don't you just curse God and die? But she got forgiven of it. So all of this, you have the Satan and you have the world and you have the flesh. And all of that conspiring against us, it just seems like we can get overwhelmed. And that's why we can be filled with such anxiety. And that's why Philippians chapter 4 is so wonderful. It's because all of those problems have been answered by God. So let's go to the passage right now and look at it here and see what is said. And I just appreciate Elmore's reading of it so well, so much, because he read it so well. Now we're going to put, I've got five things underlined. Five, you're never supposed to have five. You're supposed to have three. But we're going to have five because I think there's five in here. Five things that we can underline just in these verses that will make a huge difference for us in our life when we talk about anxiety. All right. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to all. The Lord is near. The Lord is near is number one. You know why I can be freed from all of my anxiety is the nearness of the Lord. Now, there's a couple of ways you can think about the nearness of the Lord. He is with us this morning. He is near to us. He's not way off somewhere else. Jesus said, where two or three are gathered together, there am I in the midst of them. The Lord is with us today. And we are his child. And he is our brother. And God is our father. And on you go with all of that. But just see what he says here to these people. The Lord is near. Now, he may not have exactly that idea. He may have the idea of the coming of the Lord would appear to be near. Whether it is in your death or whether it is in the second coming. Okay, how old are you? How close are you to the time when you leave this earth? We don't know, do we? You know, I went, Sam Griffin died. Sam, you know, lots of people here know Sam. Wonderful guy. I went over to his funeral over in Folsom. And I saw a guy, and I did not remember his name, and he kind of waited to talk to me. But he talked to me, and he said, I'm so-and-so, Roy Sr. Remember Roy Sr.? He worshiped here. He and Anna did for a while. He said, Roy Sr. said he wanted to tell you hello. And I was so happy. And I just, oh, my word, I haven't seen Roy in, I don't know how long, decades and everything like that. And he said, yeah, I'm doing his son's funeral tomorrow. He got hit in an auto accident and was killed. He was one of the elders in one of the congregations over there in the Sacramento area. I'll tell you what, we just don't know. And how long it is, it doesn't make any difference. It's still near. We are still near God. And if there's anything that can take away our anxiety, it is the fact of that nearness. Okay, well, let's just continue on. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. I've got number two, by thanksgiving. Okay? Prayer is a real general kind, is a very general kind of thing, and petition, you may have supplication. That's quite a bit more specific. But I want you to see what he says there. Our prayers and our petitions are to be given in thanksgiving. And I know thanksgiving is maybe a third issue that's going on here, but it is integral to the first two. And what that means is this. As soon as I open my mouth to pray, I'm thankful for my prayer and God's receiving of it. Now, the reason I say that is this. How many people pray and they wait to see what God's going to say before they're thankful for it? They get the old cart before the horse. They're going to wait to see if they're going to be happy or not, or if they're going to be thankful or not. They're going to wait until they see what God says and when he says it. So what this does is it puts things in its perspective order in the right kind of way. As soon as I ask God to do something, I'm already thankful for whatever answer he gives. Already thankful. And I will already thank him for it. How many people, you don't have to live very long at all, how many people do you know who are bitter because they asked God to do something and it didn't happen? Or it didn't happen the way they wanted to, or it didn't happen when they wanted to, and they are not thankful at all. Therefore, they're unhappy. Therefore, they have all of this going on in their life. So, for me, the nearness of God is number one, and the thankfulness that predates everything I say to God is just of tremendous importance in all of that. And we could say it like this. I pray to God, and I ask him to do something, And number one, it may be difficult, the answer that he gives me. Number two, I may not like it very much, but I better learn to like it. Number three, I'm going to have confidence in his wise counsel and guidance of my life. And number four, I feel stable in whatever answer he gives. There's the removal of anxiety. I just think that's really important in the way that he says that there. Present, and we'll move on from that little point right there. But in everything, in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Peace of God's number three. Paul began the letter to the Philippians with grace and peace be with you. He begins all his epistles that way. Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians. Peace is the first thing out of his mouth almost every single time he writes. It's peace from God and it's peace to God. Peace with God. I think it underscores the relationship that we can have. And so, you know, the greatest problem I've got is not what I'm going to eat. The greatest problem I've got is my relationship to God and the forgiveness of my sins. It trumps everything. And if I've fragmented my relationship with God because of stubborn sin, I need to straighten that out. And so I can straighten it out. That's what Christ is all about. It was so great what Bruce explained this morning about that passage in 1 Peter chapter 3. The calmness that can come over us because of what we have done with God in response to what Christ has done for us. The peace of God, as he says this, which guards our hearts and our minds in Christ Jesus. There's a third reason that I don't need to be anxious, anxietous for anything about all of that. Because it all pales in regard or in response to the real problem. Verse 8. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, number four, think on these things. Is that not Romans 12, verse 1 and verse 2? Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. That's exactly what he says right there. Concentrating on all the wonderful things, marvelous, unbelievable things that God has given us. That's what will take away the anxiety. Because there's always something greater than the anxieties that we have. And believe me, I am not minimizing the anxieties. I'm not minimizing the problems that you might have. I'm not minimizing the ones that I might have. The hard, hard things that we have to go through. Don't think this is all butterflies and light shows that I'm talking about here. No, I'm talking about the tough things. But we need to think about what's good and the good things that we can do within that. So thinking about that, think on these things. Number four is the way that removes all of that anxiety. Then verse 9, whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put into practice, and the peace of God will be with you. That's number five. God will keep that peace with us because we have fellowship with him. Married to him. I realize that in Revelation, it talks about the marriage of the bride and the groom. The bride is the church and the groom is Jesus. But we're engaged in that sense right now. I'm not married to Becky like I'm married to Christ. It It doesn't matter what happens in your life. If you have a fellowship and a relationship with God, everything else is secondary. Secondary in the sense that it is a huge problem. God, as He oversees and cares and loves and blesses, is the supreme relationship that we have in our life. And if we love Him like we should, like we ought, like we can, all the other things that begin to fragment and blow up and cause anxiety will not be nearly so important as they would if we didn't have that relationship with Christ. So he mentions peace constantly in this last little part of this verse, the peace of God will be with you. So this is just really important. It really is amazing. So I'll end this sermon with two things, one of two things. You can make your own choice about this. I'll tell you what choice you ought to make. I'll make the suggestion about that. You can either listen to your heart and worry, or you can talk to your heart and find peace. God wants us to talk to our heart. He wants us to take this information, as well as any other information that He gives us in God's Word, and talk to our heart and tell it how it needs to feel, and have our heart bow to what God gives us in His Word. You know how to conquer anxiety? It's not, I don't even know what color pills it is in the movie. Red pill, white pill, black pill, blue pill, I don't know. Whatever, it's not taking a pill, it's not that. It is something you have to learn. It truly is. But God gives us the tools to do that. So what a great, great God we serve. So get your songbooks out. We're going to sing an invitation song. In the conclusion of this, if there's somebody here this morning that would like to obey the gospel, or if we can pray for you, come to the front while we stand and sing.